Osho, The Secret of Secrets, Volume 2, Talks on the Secret of the Golden Flower, Discourse Number 14, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Your dancing meditation seemed to be bringing forth an overwhelming sensuousness. All that has not been taken, all that has not been given, is revealed then. The play of nature on my whole being, all the beauty that I behold, all the music that enchants my ears and my soul, all seems to be expressed in voluptuousness. Even when I close my eyes in silent sitting, this tangible presence is felt. I welcome and enjoy this growing sensitivity, an orgasmic affair with life. I cannot imagine God descending upon me, but as the ultimate lover, when I will be turned inside out, totally open and as readable as the glorious moon. Can I trust this feeling? And is it of any meaning with regard to being with you and growing through you? I have not been blessed with transcendental experiences. All I know and all that seems to be my lot to know is this joy, ever increasing and fresh, to be part of the cosmic play and to be able to transmute it in my daily living, in all kinds of creative fashions, from cooking to dancing and playing. Can you please advise me? Tanmaya, this is what I am teaching here. I don't teach the transcendental. I teach the immanent. Because the immanent is the transcendental. I don't teach the ultimate. I teach the immediate. Because the immediate is the body of the ultimate. If you enter into the immediate, you will find the ultimate pulsating there. The ultimate is the heartbeat of the immediate. This is my fundamental teaching, that there is no division between this and that. That is contained in this. The other soul is contained in this soul. You need not go anywhere. If you can be joyous, flowing, alive, sensitive, orgasmic, this very soul immediately is transformed into the other soul. This very world, the paradise, this very body, the Buddha. Remember it, because down the ages religions have been teaching a dichotomy between this and that. Religions have been teaching a kind of schizophrenia, a split between the body and the soul, between the lower and the higher, between the outer and the inner, and so on and so forth. All divisions are false. Reality is one. There is nothing lower and nothing higher. And there is nothing outer, nothing inner. There is no body, no soul. It is all one. The body is the soul visible, And the soul is the body invisible. There is no creator other than this very creation. The creator and the creation are not separated. They are as one as the dancer and the dance. They cannot exist apart. They can only exist as one. You cannot take the dancer apart from his dance. If you take, he is no more a dancer. You cannot take the dance apart the dancer. There is no possibility. They are utterly one, expressions of the same energy, the same phenomena. So what is happening to you, Tanmaya, is exactly what should happen. This is what I am desiring, longing, praying for you. This is the way you are coming closer and closer to me. Forget all about transcendental experiences. All those so-called transcendental experiences are nothing but bullshit. These are the real experiences. This sensitivity that is growing in you. This receptivity that is becoming deeper and deeper every moment. This joy of existence, of life, of being, of love. Don't think of seeing some spiritual visions, God sitting on a golden throne. Those are all fantasies of starved minds, of mediocre minds. Don't think about something extraordinary, because the extraordinary is desired only by the very ordinary. That is the desire of the inferior. If you are intelligent, if you are alert, the ordinary becomes the extraordinary. And that is the magic I teach you. I am giving you an alchemy. Yes, cooking can become prayer, only then you are religious. If cooking can become prayer, only then. If cleaning the floor can become meditation, only then. This ordinary life is ordinary only because you are dull, because you are asleep, because you are thick. It is ordinary only because you don't have perception to see its depth. You can't see the colors of life and the beautiful forms of life and the eternal benediction that goes on savoring each moment of it. It is a continuum. Because you can't see the beauty of a rising sun and you can't see the beauty of the stars in the night, and because you can't see the beauty of human eyes, hence, out of this poverty arises the desire for some transcendental experience. Experiencing God, heaven, paradise. Experiencing the arousal of the serpent power in your spine. Experiencing these things, are desiring to experience these things, are all mind games. The true religion is always of the here and the now. Yes, that's what I want you to become, sensuous. Because if you are not sensuous, you can never be spiritual. If you cannot enjoy small things of life, if you cannot sip your tea with celebration, you are not religious at all. You can go to Kaaba or to Jerusalem, or you can go to Kasi. You will never be religious anywhere if you cannot sip the tea with utter gratitude, and the aroma of the tea and the beautiful smell that is arising. If you cannot feel it, if you are not sensuous enough to feel it, you will not be able to feel God. Because God is the center of everything. God is not the original cause, and God is not the ultimate goal. God is the center of every condition that you come across every moment of your life. God is the center of the woman you have fallen in love with. God is the center of the man you have become friendly with. God is the center of everything that you come across. God means the center, and the world means the periphery, the circumference, and they are never separate. And the center is hidden in the circumference. To be sensuous means to become aware of the circumference, and to be spiritual means to become aware of the center. Sensuousness is the beginning of spirituality. Become more and more sensuous. That is the way of being alive. But your old religions have been teaching you just the opposite. They teach you a kind of bodily death. They teach you make your body more and more insensitive. That is a cheap trick. Make your body more and more cold, so that you can pretend a kind of aloofness, so that you can say, nothing affects me, because you are carrying a dull and dead body around yourself. Naturally, nothing affects you. But this is not growth. Real growth is, you are open, vulnerable, you are affected by everything, and yet nothing affects you. You are in the midst of situations, and yet not part of it. You are on the circumference of everything, and yet the center is never forgotten. You say, your dancing meditation seems to be bringing forth an overwhelming sensuousness. Tanmaya, you are blessed. Allow it. Don't become afraid. And don't let your old conditions interfere. That's why I teach dance. I teach music. I teach singing. I want your body to vibrate at the optimum. I want your body to become a pulsating, streaming phenomenon. Not a stagnant pool, but a running, rushing river to the ocean. All that has not been taken, all that has not been given is revealed, and yes, when you are sensuous, God is available. all the mysteries are close by. Because that is the only way to know the mysterious. Sensuousness means you are open, your doors are open. You are ready to throb with existence. If a bird starts singing, the sensuous person immediately feels the song. Echoes in his deepest core of being. The non-sensuous person does not hear it at all. Or maybe it is just a noise somewhere. It does not penetrate his heart. A cuckoo starts calling. A sensuous person starts feeling as if the cuckoo is not calling from some far away mango grove, but deep down within his own soul. It becomes his own call. It becomes his own longing for the divine, his own longing for the beloved. In that moment, the observer and the observed are one. Seeing a beautiful flower bloom, the sensuous person blooms with it, becomes a flower with it. The sensuous person is liquid, flowing, fluid. Each experience, and he becomes it. Seeing a sunset, he is the sunset. Seeing the night, dark night, beautiful, silent darkness, he becomes the darkness. In the morning, he becomes the light. He is all that life is. He tastes life from every nook and corner. Hence, he becomes rich. This is real richness. Listening to music, he is music. Listening to the sound of water, he becomes that sound. And when the wind passes through a bamboo grove and the cracking bamboos, and he is not far away from them, he is amidst them, one of them, he is a bamboo. A Zen master told one of his disciples who wanted to paint bamboos that go and first become a bamboo. He was an accomplished painter. He has passed all the art examinations and with distinction. His name was already started becoming famous. And the master said, you go to the forest, live with the bamboos for a few years, become a bamboo. And the day you can become a bamboo, come back and paint, not before it. How can you paint a bamboo if you have not known what a bamboo feels like from the within? You can paint the bamboo from the outside, but that is just a photograph. And that is the difference between photography and painting. Photograph can never be a painting. Howsoever skillfully, artfully done, it remains only the reflection of the circumference of the bamboo. No camera can enter into the soul. But for the first time, photography was developed. A great fear has arisen in the world of painting that maybe now painting will lose its old beauty and its old pedestal. Because the photography will be developed every day more and more, and soon it will fulfill its requirement. That fear was absolutely unbased. In fact, after the invention of the camera, photography has developed tremendously, but simultaneously, painting has learned new dimensions, new visions, new perceptions. Painting has become more richer. It had to become. Before the invention of the camera, the painter was functioning as a camera. The master said, you go to the forest. And the disciple went, and 3 years he remained in the forest, being with the bamboos in all kinds of climates. Because when it is raining, the bamboo has a different joy. And when it is windy, the bamboo has a different mood. And when it is sunny, of course, everything changes in the being of the bamboo. And when a cuckoo comes in the bamboo groove and starts calling, the bamboos are silent and responsive. He had to be there for 3 years. And then it happens. One day it happens. Sitting by the side of the bamboos, he forgot who he is. And the wind started blowing, and he started swaying, like a bamboo. Only later on he remembers that for a long time he has not been a man. He entered in the soul of the bamboo. Then he painted the bamboos. Those bamboos have certainly a totally different quality, which no photograph can ever have. Photographs can be beautiful, but dead. That painting is alive, because it shows the soul of the bamboo in all its moods, in all its richness, in all its climates. Sadness is there, and joy is there, and agony is there, and ecstasy is there, and all that a bamboo knows. The whole biography of a bamboo is there. To be sensuous is to be available to the mysteries of life. Become more and more sensuous, and drop all condemnation. Let your body becomes just a door. All your senses should become clear doors with no hindrances. So when you hear, you become the music. And when you see, you become the light. When you touch, you become that which you have touched. Tanmaya, you say, I welcome and enjoy this growing sensitivity and orgasmic affair with life. I cannot imagine God descending upon me but as the ultimate lover, when I will be turned inside out, totally open and as readable as the glorious moon. You have understood me rightly. This is my message in short. God comes always as a lover. God is the immediate and the ultimate beloved. And if you know God in some other way, remember that God is your mind creation. It is not the true God. And because religions arose around untrue gods, they have not been able to help humanity to become more loving. On the contrary, they have filled the whole world with hatred, with violence. The true religion can only conceive of God as the beloved. You are on the right track. Your past will pull you back. the priests, the parents, the conditionings in your mind will pull you back. Beware. Drop all that. Trust this growing sensitivity, this orgasmic openness. This is the door to the divine. Trust it and go headlong with it. The second question, when you say good, does it mean good? Or does it sometimes mean don't bother me with your nonsense? Rudra, first meditate on this a small anecdote. I recall the time a man gave a speech at a Rotary Club on the subject of journalism and journalists. It is one of the tenets of the Rotarians that they may not swear or use cuss words, but the speaker, not being a Rotarian himself, did not know this, and in his talk he used a profanity he should not have used in that particular hall to that particular audience. At the end of the meeting, a local minister in the audience approached the speaker and dressed him down for having used the language he did. The speaker apologized profusely, and the minister went on about how Rotarians, to say nothing of the church, strongly disapproved of bad language. He then walked away. He got about 10 feet down the corridor, then turned around and approached the speaker again. Off the record, he said, and just between us, any time you want to call a journalist a son of a bitch, it is okay with me. So on the record, good simply means good. Off the record, it means don't bother me with your nonsense. The third question. Watching the energy changes that are constantly happening in me, suddenly the question arises, what is that which is watching, and in what sense is it different from the observed energy? Kosa, this is a beautiful space to enter in. When the question arises for the first time, what is the observed and who is the observer? This is a beautiful space to enter in when the question becomes relevant. Now, on each step, you will start losing the duality of the observer and the observed. The observer and the observed in the ultimate sense, in reality, are one. They are two only because we have not yet been capable to see the one. Remember the secret of the golden flower. It says Tao is one. Then it divides itself into two, yin and yang, darkness and light, life and death. But the reality is one. It looks two. It looks too because we see it through the prism of the mind. The two-ness of it is a creation of our mind. It is not there. It is just like in a full moon night, look at the moon and then press your eyelids. And suddenly you see two moons. And you know, the moon is one. But go and press in the eye, and you know perfectly well the moon is one, but now you can see two moons. Exactly that's what is happening. Mind is creating duality. Because mind cannot conceive the one. There is an intrinsic impossibility for the mind to conceive the one. Try to understand why the mind cannot conceive the one. Mind needs distinctions. The one is distinctionless. The whole purpose of the mind is to demark things. The whole purpose of the mind is to particularize things. This is a woman and that is a man. This is a friend and that is an enemy. This is food and this is just a stone. This is a chair and that is a table. This is the door and this is the wall. This is the function of the mind. The whole purpose of the mind is to make distinctions. It is very utilitarian. It has to be used. But in the ultimate sense, it becomes the barrier. That which is a help on the circumference becomes a hindrance at the center. Mind has no truth, but only utility. Just as a child is born, no child brings a label with himself, a name, plate or anything. He simply comes. You don't ask him, who are you? And what is your name? And from where you are coming? The child will simply look at you and will think you are stupid. What nonsense you are talking. You start giving him a name, an identity. And you know that name is false. Although useful, but false. Untrue, but utilitarian. He will need that name. There are millions of people. If he falls in love with a woman and she wants to write a letter to him, how she is supposed to write a letter to a man who has no name? How the letter can be delivered to him? It has utility in the world. We give him a name. And slowly, slowly we completely forget that name is just a utilitarian device. It has no truth about it. You can change the name. You can go to the court, declare that you drop your old name and you will be a new name. You can change as many times as you want. Exactly like that, mind is a device, a natural device, to help you function in the world, to find you things. If you drop the mind, all is blurred into one reality. Then it will not be possible to make any distinction what is marshmallow and what is a pillow. You may start sleeping with the marshmallow underneath your head and you may start eating the pillow. So I am not saying mind is not useful. Mind is useful. But its very usefulness is based on creating distinctions. But when you start moving in meditation, you are moving beyond mind. You are moving beyond utility into truth. Then you are trying to see that which is, not that which is useful. Then slowly, slowly the duality will disappear. And kosa, this is just on the threshold, when the observer and the observed disappears, and I have been watching you, Kosa, you have been growing so beautifully. Kosa is a well-educated woman. She is a PhD. Although here she just cleans the toilets. But that has been of immense help. PhDs need. Otherwise they remain hung up in the head. It has been a device. Deliberately I have put Kosa into cleaning work. And she has proved really beautiful. She has completely forgotten her PhD, her education, her career, her name, etc. Completely forgotten. She has just become involved into the work that has been given to her, utterly, totally. And that utterness, that totalness is bringing this great fruit into her being. Now this is not a philosophical question that she is asking. Philosophy has disappeared from her mind. Now this is an experience, something existential. Now she is really faced by a problem. Who is the observer? And who is the observed? Now, you will have to drop that idea also. Now the observer will be the observed. Now there will be no distinction between the two. The seer will be the seen, and the knower will be the known, and the lover will be the beloved. It is very strange when for the first time it starts happening. It blurs you. Your whole mind structure simply shatters. It looks almost you are going mad or what. Just think, seeing a bamboo and you forget who is the bamboo and who is the seer. It will look insane. And when you will come back into your normal utilitarian world, you will become suspicious, distrustful, doubting what is happening. This is dangerous. How can I be the bamboo? But this is true. We are all part of one reality. I am in my right hand, I am in my left hand. I am in my body, but my body is joined with the earth and the sun and the moon. We are all joined together, interlinked. Nobody is independent. We are all interdependent. When slowly, slowly, the mind takes leap from you, you say goodbye to the mind, and the no mind opens its infinity, then you are the bamboo. Then you are in the bamboo, as the bamboo. The observer has become the observed, and the tremendous benediction of it. And the great transformation that comes through it. And this will be happening, Kosa, more and more. You have earned it. Don't be afraid. It will appear like insanity and the mind will condemn it like insanity. This is the point when you have to listen to the master, not to the mind. I say to you, go ahead. You have risked a lot, now risk a little more. let this distinction also disappear. And with its disappearance, the Satori. The third question, cannot the teaching of being here now be sometimes dangerous? In the hands of fools, of course. In the hands of the fools, anything can be dangerous. Anything, whatever. Quran is dangerous. Bible is dangerous. Gita is dangerous. And you know it. The whole history is full of the proofs. Such beautiful statements, so crystal clear, but in the hands of the fools, something goes wrong. Nectar becomes poison. And just the reverse is the case. If you are intelligent, wise, even poison becomes medicine. One day a man came to me. He was very much worried because he has been following Jai Krishnamurti almost for 20 years. Then he had a chance, accidentally, to fly with Krishnamurti from Delhi to Bombay. And then he saw, and what he saw shocked him, sacked him completely. He could not sleep. That why he wasted time with this man for 20 years. So he came to me and said, what should I do now? My 20 years wasted. I said, what actually has happened? He said, I saw him reading a detective novel. I said, in the hands of Jai Krishnamurti, a detective novel becomes a Quran. And in your hands, a Quran becomes just a detective novel. It depends. It all depends on you. I have heard a man asked his psychoanalyst, after many days of psychoanalysis, nothing was happening. The psychoanalyst was also getting worried. The man was also getting worried. He was paying so much and nothing was coming out of it. Finally, he blurted out. He said, I think the real problem is not my mind. The real problem is the people with whom I work. My managers, my treasurers, the clerks. The people with whom I work are the real problem. So just psychoanalyzing my mind is not going to help. The psychoanalyst asks, what is exactly the problem with your people you work with? He said, they are all utterly lazy. Nobody wants to work. They all go on postponing. The psychoanalyst said, you do one thing. You make beautiful boards. Write on the boards in capital letters. Do it now. Tomorrow never comes. Tomorrow is death. Life is today. And put this board everywhere in your office. So wherever they see, they will find it. This will have some impact on them. After the third day, the psychiatrist phoned his patient. His wife was on the phone and he said, He is in the hospital because he has been beaten badly by his people. He said, why? The woman said, I think it is because of your advice. So he rushed to the hospital. The man was really in pain, fractured all over the body. He said, what happened? He said, it is you and your stupid advice. The treasurer immediately escaped with all the cash. Do it now. Tomorrow never comes. Tomorrow is death. He simply wrote a note that I have been thinking to escape with the cash for many years. But if it is so, tomorrow is death, then this is the time. My manager has escaped, eloped with my typist. And the other workers just jumped upon me and started beating me. They said, we had always wanted to beat you. And we were postponing. You ask me, cannot the teaching of being here now be sometimes dangerous? It can be if you work in such an office. Or if you have such people inside your head. I have heard, at the time of the Wilson government in England, George Brown, always drunk, is foreign secretary. A reception is held on the visit of the French president, Pompidou. Madame Pompidou is seated next to Brown, who starts the conversation drunkenly. What do you want out of life, madam? Madame Pompidou replies, all I want is happiness. She added as she felt Brown's hand traveling up her thigh, but not before the soup. I teach you to be here now. But you will have to take care of many things, not before the soup. To be here now needs great intelligence. It is not the message for the stupid, for the mediocre. When I say to you to be here now, I am giving great respect to your intelligence. This is my way of showing respect towards you. You have to be worthy of it. To be here now means to be very alert, aware, conscious. So that this moment is no more burdened with past, no more burdened with future. So this moment is unburdened with all garbage and is clear, pure, innocent. And in that innocence, you will find the door into God. But remember always, you can turn, change the meaning, impose your own ideas on the greatest of teachings and destroy them. All depends on you. The fourth question, why is feminine energy the darkness principle? Does this mean that there is supposed to be something sinister about it? The author of The Secret of the Golden Flower seems a little male chauvinistic sometimes. The question is from Ma Anand Prem. Anand Prem, you are a female chauvinistic. Rather than thinking about the author of the secret of the golden flower, think about yourself. Master Lutasu is saying something just factual. Who has given you the idea that darkness symbolizes something sinister? That is your idea. Darkness is as beautiful as light. Equally beautiful and valuable as light. Do you think night has less value than the day? In fact, it may have more value than the day, but not less. It is the day that tires you, exhausts you. It is the night that rejuvenates you, replenishes you. It is the day that kills you. It is the night that refreshes you again, prepares you for tomorrow, keeps you young. What is sinister in darkness? Darkness is vast. Light is never so vast. Light is always limited. Darkness has no limitations. Light is shallow. Darkness has depth. That's why we have not painted Krishna as white, but as black. His one name is Shyam. Shyam means the black one. Why? Just to give a sense of depth. Whiteness is a little shallow. Hence in the West, so much craze for santan, because the white face does not give the feeling of depth. Lying on the sun beach, under the sun, making it a little brown, and it starts having a depth and a beauty of its own. And darkness is cool. And darkness makes you feel alone. It is very meditative. You cannot sleep in the light. You need darkness to sleep. And sleep and samadhi are very similar. In darkness, you can enter into no mind very easily. Who has given you the idea, Anand Prem, that darkness is sinister? It must be your own female chauvinistic mind. Nothing is wrong in darkness. Darkness is the energy of the earth, and light is the energy of the sky. And the meeting of the earth and the sky is the whole secret of existence. Man is a meeting of the earth and the sky. And they both have to be in balance. If your light and darkness principle are balanced, if your male and female principle are in deep harmony, you will attain to one. Lutasu is simply stating a fact. The woman is more restful than man. Light is the principle of restlessness. That's why in the morning, as the sun rises, you have to awake. You cannot rest anymore. As the sun sets, you start feeling sleepy. Now you are getting ready to rest. Fall into tremendously deep oblivion. Light will bring you back to the circumference, to the day-to-day affairs, the routine world. Darkness takes you far, far away from this world. You forget all the turmoil and the anxiety and the worry and the hurry. The woman has the same quality of giving you rest. If you love a woman, just being with her is restful. Only a person who has come to meet with his inner woman can live without a woman. Then there is no necessity. Because he is rested. He has found an inner shelter. But till you find an inner shelter, you will have to find an outer shelter. It is absolutely necessary. The woman gives you rest. Hence, Lutasu calls her dark. The moment you are in the embrace of your woman, are in her lap, you are again a child and she is your mother. She may be your wife, but she again becomes your mother. Again, she overwhelms you like darkness. She makes you cool. She takes away all the heat that has been generated by the day. It is easier to fall in deep sleep with your woman. She is the principle of the dark. And the woman is as vast as darkness. Man is very particular. The woman is universal. That's why man is tired soon. The woman has more capacity to resist. Women live longer than men. Women suffer less from illnesses than men. Women go less mad than men. Women commit less suicides than men. She is restful, cool, calm and collected. And she has that vastness. The woman is always generous. She gives and does not ask in return. She protects. She nourishes. Not only the child, she nurses the child with her milk, she nurses her beloved with love, which is a higher value food, which is a deeper food, a nourishment for the soul. Who has given you, Anand Prem, the idea that darkness is sinister? There is nothing sinister. But I can understand from where this idea must be coming. The Western mind has lived on duality and has never been able to penetrate to the One, the Jewish heritage is of duality. And because of Judaism, Christianity and Islam also became dualistic. Anand Prem carries a Jewish heritage. The Jewish heritage is that God is good. But then, where to put all the badness that you come across in the world? So as a scapegoat, devil has been created. Devil is all bad, God is all good. To protect God from badness, otherwise you will have to put badness somewhere or other. And if there is only one God, that means good and bad both are contained in Him. Then he is both. Jews have never been that courageous. They were afraid to put good and bad both in the same God. So the only possible way out was to create two gods, God of good and God of bad. Hence God and devil duality. Then God is light and devil is dark. Then devil is always painted as dark, animal-like, with horns and a tail and hoofs. And with dark colors, like a dark night, sinister. That's from where Anand Prem gets the idea of dark being sinister. And the same has penetrated into Christianity and into Islam. These both religions are byproducts of Judaism. In the world, there has really been only two religions, Judaism and Hinduism. Christianity and Islam belong to the Judaistic tradition. Jainism, Buddhism belong to the Hinduistic world, the Hindu vision. The Hindu vision is totally different. In the Hindu vision, there is no devil. It is non-dual. God is both. God has to be both. But both are so balanced in God that they cancel each other. And God is beyond. God is both, that's why God is beyond, because they cancel each other. This is the Eastern concept of the transcendental, non-dual. So you will see Eastern gods painted black. And you will see Eastern goddesses looking very devilish. Just think of Kali the mother with a garland of human skulls. No Jew can conceive goddess God with human skulls and with a fresh head just now cut, blood dripping in her hands. And not only that, she is dancing on the chest of her husband. Must be a real woman. And with all this, and a sword in hands. So beautiful, so utterly beautiful. Look into her eyes, the tremendous depth and beauty and compassion and love and warmth. Now the Western mind is simply baffled. What nonsense is this? If this woman is God, then who is the devil? They cannot understand, because we have been trying to bring both the polarities together. They both have been brought in Mother, the Kali, absolutely together. Kali means the black. And the word Kal is very significant. It means three things. First, it means black. Second, it means time. Third, it means death. The Mother Kali represents all these three things. She is time, the eternal movement of time. This infinite movement, change, flux, and she is death too. And she is black. And yet, look deep into her and see the beauty and the benediction and the compassion and the love and the warmth. She is life and she is death. She is black and she is white. She is the meeting of the polar opposites. Luther Su is not a male chauvinist. Be a little more careful when you start talking about people like Luther Su. Be a little more alert. People like Luther Su or Lao Tzu Su or Chuang Tzu or Buddha or Krishna or Christ are neither men nor women. They have gone beyond. They have transcended all dualities. And still both the dualities are in them, but so balanced, in such harmony, sound and silence in such harmony, that great music is created. Black and white in such harmony that the whole panorama of existence is created. Life and death in such harmony, in such deep embrace, that eternity arises out of it. The sixth question. Bhagwan, do you believe in the second coming of Christ? And who do you think I am? Christ is not a person. Christ is a state of consciousness. There have been Christs before Jesus. There have been Christs after Jesus. Jesus is only one of the Christs. Buddha is a Christ. Mahavira is a Christ. Luther Su is a Christ. Zarathustra is a Christ. Christ simply means the ultimate state of consciousness. It is equivalent to Buddha. Buddha is not the name of any person. It is a happening. So is Christ. It is not Jesus' name. His name is Jesus. One day, Jesus disappears and the cross, Christ consciousness descended in him. He was no more the ego. He became the vehicle of the whole. she could say, I and my Father in heaven are one. This is Christ consciousness. It has nothing to do with Jesus. If you are waiting for Jesus' second coming, then you are waiting in vain. But if you are waiting for Christ's coming, Christ has been always coming. Christ is in front of you. You are listening to Him. Not to Jesus, certainly. Not to Gautam Siddhartha, certainly. But you are facing a Buddha, just as you are facing a Christ. You remind me, I have heard of an editor of an upstate small town newspaper. For years he had cherished a set of old-fashioned wooden scarhead type of some 60-point size. On more than one occasion, his assistants had tried to induce him to use it, but he always firmly vetoed the idea. One summer, the old man went away for a short fishing trip. In his absence, a cyclone struck the town, tore the steeple off the church, unroofed several houses, sucked a couple of wells dry, and scattered a few barns around. No bigger catastrophe had hit the town in years, so figuring, now is our chance, his assistants got down the 60-point type from the shelf and set up a sensational front-page headline with it. 2 days later, the editor came storming into the office. Great Jehoshaphat, he shouted, what do you mean by taking down that type for a cyclone? All these years I have been saving that type for the second coming of Christ. Then you will be waiting in vain. Don't think that Christ and Jesus are synonymous. That's where lies the error of 2,000 years of Christian church. Many have come in this time. This was a long period. Many have come out of the Christian fold. And few have come even in the Christian fold itself. Mr. Eckhart was a Christ. So was Jacob Bohme. So was Saint Francis. These were in the same fold, but still Christianity missed them because they were waiting for Jesus, the same body, the same form. That is utter nonsense. It is not going to happen again. Jesus cannot be repeated. To repeat Jesus, you will have to repeat the whole history that preceded Jesus, and that is impossible. Jesus cannot be repeated, because for Jesus to be here, you will need Maryam. You will need Joseph the carpenter. You will need the old 2,000-year world of Jerusalem. You will need Herod the king and Pontius Pilate the governor general. You will need the whole structure because Jesus came as part of it. No, Jesus cannot be repeated. There is no way. But Christ can descend. Christ can descend on anybody. When John the Baptist baptized Jesus in the river Jordan, the story says, a great white dove came from the heaven, out of the blue. Nobody has seen such whiteness, such purity. And he descended into Jesus and disappeared into Jesus. This is just symbolic. This is symbolic of Christhood. Jesus became enlightened. Something of the beyond, as Master Luther would like to say, the heaven penetrated the earth. These are just symbols, metaphors, a white dove descending from the heaven, entering into Jesus and disappearing. And since that moment, Jesus is no more Jesus. He is Christ. The same happened to Buddha under the Bodhi tree. Something descended in him. And after that, he was not Gautam Siddhartha. He was the Buddha. Don't wait for Jesus coming. And if you wait for Jesus coming, you will be wasting your time. He is not going to come. He cannot come. But if you are waiting for Christ coming, then there is no need to wait. Christ is already here. And those who have waited for Christ, not for the particular form, but the consciousness, the essence of it, they have always found Christ somewhere or other. Thousands of masters have existed in the same consciousness. It is said, a Christian missionary went to see a Zen master. The old Zen master had never heard of Christ. He lived in a far away mountain cave. The missionary took really much trouble to reach there. It was a hard and arduous journey, hazardous and dangerous too. He carried his Bible. He wanted to convert the old master because his name was all over the country and millions loved him and traveled to his cave. So he went there. And he told the master, I would like to read a few sentences to you. And he opened the Bible and he started reading the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the meek, for theirs is the kingdom of God. And so on and so forth. Only few sentences, and the old master said, wait, whosoever said this was a Buddha. Whosoever said this was a Buddha. No need to read further. I have also experienced this. No need to read further. Yes, blessed are the meek, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Look at me. It has happened to me. Now this poor missionary, he had come to convert. This Christ, he had to come to convert into a Christian. He wanted to convert a Christ into a Christian. The utter stupidity of it. But he could not understand yet. He said, let me read it whole. You will be very much impressed. But the old man said, there is no need to read it. Whosoever said it is a Buddha. He knows. He knows as much as I know. We are the same. You look at me. But the Christian was too much of a Christian. He went back with his Bible, thinking that this old man is crazy, calling himself Christ. How can he be a Christ? he was thinking in terms of Jesus. He does not know the meaning of Christ. Christ is the Western equivalent of Buddha, the awakened one, the blessed one. That is actually the meaning of Christ. The meaning of Bhagwan is the meaning of Christ, the blessed one. And the last question. I have fallen in love many times in my life, but it has always been very frustrating. What is the cause of it? Love is almost an unknown phenomenon. So you must have fallen into something else. And if you fall into something else, sooner or later you have to fall out of it. Love is a very rare experience. Don't call it love. It is your desire. It is your fantasy that you call love. It is your need. It is your fear of being lonely. You feel lonely and empty and you want to fill yourself with somebody else. And nobody can fill oneself with somebody else. So sooner or later, frustration. Frustration is bound to happen to your so-called love. And then, when you fall in love, what really you start doing? You start fantasizing, expecting too much. Because you expect too much frustration follows. This is something new in this age, and more so in the West than in the East. The East has been about love very pragmatic, very realistic. Nothing much frustration happens in the East. Because people never expect much out of it. So what frustration? Marriage comes first in the East, and then living together with a woman or man slowly. You start becoming friendly, you start liking each other, you start helping each other, and a kind of love grows. But there is no romance in it, hence no frustration. In the West, love has to happen first, and love drives you crazy. It is a hormonal disease that you call love. It is something chemical. And in that chemical impact, as if you are under drug, stoned. Actually it is that. The drug has been released by your own hormones, so you don't know that. When you inject a drug, you know. It is a biological drug. The nature has been using it to propagate. Otherwise, just think, if there was no intoxicant inside you, just think for a moment that there is no intoxication with love, no desire to propagate. Who will propagate? For what? The world will stop. The nature has befooled you. It has put a built-in program in you. it triggers a process of hormones in you, and suddenly you start seeing dreams. And small things start looking very great. I have heard a lovely but rather flat-chested young woman visited a physician for her periodic physical examination. "Please remove your blouse," the doctor told her. "I know," the young lady protested. "I just could not." "Come, come," the doctor replied. "Let us not make mountains out of molehills." But in love, that is what happens. People start making mountains out of molehills. And then, when frustration sets in, they start making molehills out of mountains. Everything looks beautiful when you are in that drugged state. That's why in all the languages of the world, the phrase is falling in. You fall from your consciousness. You lose your consciousness. You are almost a drunkard. Then an ordinary woman looks so beautiful, so angelic. An ordinary man looks like Hercules. Everything looks so great and so big. And this is nothing but a projection of your desire. And sooner or later, it will clash with reality. And Hercules will come down. And Cleopatra will come down. And then you are sitting face to face, an ordinary man, an ordinary woman, wondering what you are doing here. Wondering how you got here. And if there are few children also playing around, then finished. Then just because of these children, now you have to be with together. Hercules is dead, Cleopatra is dead. Just two ordinary, silly looking people taking care of the children, because they have to be educated, and they will do the same sooner or later. Your expectations are so great, hence the frustration. Meditate over on this. Go very, very slowly. The lady of the house called down to her butler, Smithers, "Come up to my bedroom, please." When he came through the door, she said, "Now, Smithers, the time has come. Take off my shoes." So Smithers took off her shoes. "Now take off my stockings." So he took off her stockings. "Now, Smithers, take off my dress." So he took off her dress. "Now, Smithers, take off my brassier." So off comes her bra. "Now, Smithers, take off my knickers, and if I ever catch you wearing my clothes again, you will have to find yourself another job." Now, this is what happens. You were expecting. And the frustration. Enough for today.